Welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast, where our job is to help you build visibility, professional credibility, and connection with your ideal client by putting the human at the center of innovative marketing, so you can build and strengthen an engaging, enduring relationship with your ideal clients. I'm Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and I'm honored that you're here with me. If you haven't joined our wonderful marketing transformation community yet, go to innovabiz.co and collect your free gift as well. Do subscribe to the show and also leave a review because it helps others find us. Let's get into today's masterclass on this InnovaBuzz podcast.
You have everything you need in that wonderful head and mind and body of yours. Are all the skills and all of the capabilities and all of the thinking that you need to be brilliant. Within your teams exist already the ideas and the innovations that you need to take your business into the future. You've just got to be brave enough to unlock it. And in your business, in an entirety, exists what that next move is. But all of it requires you to slow down. It requires you to get out of your own way and to ultimately understand that the only enemy that exists is the enemy within. And if you can control that enemy within, the world is your oyster, the opportunity to live and lead a successful and brilliant and fulfilling life is all there for the taking, but you've got to get out of your own way and put that enemy within to bed.
Welcome back. I hope you've had an awesome week so far. If you haven't yet listened to our recent conversations with Rob Thomas, the founder of Networking in Diners and creator of the Lean Startup Movement, Steve Blank, then do check them out. But wait until you've listened to this episode first. I'm really excited to have on the InnovaBuzz podcast as my guest today, Janine Garner. She's the best-selling author of It's Who You Know, From Me to We, and her latest book, Be Brilliant, How to Lead a Life of Influence. Over the past two decades, Janine has worked with thousands of high-profile leaders and helped countless of Australia's top 50 ASX, that's the Australian Stock Exchange, companies and multinationals. Janine is a global thought leader on powerful networking, on collaboration and on leadership. She's passionate about helping high-performing leaders and teams and bringing brilliant people together to achieve remarkable results. In our discussion today, Janine talked to me about how we all already have everything within us to be brilliant. We just need to be brave enough to unleash it. We talked about reframing by asking, what problem is it that I solve? And we talked about curiosity outside of our comfort zone and connecting the dots. Without further ado, then, let's fly into the hive and get the buzz from Janine Garner. Hi, I'm your host, Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and I'm really excited to welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast today from Sydney in Australia, Janine Garner, who's one of Australia's leading experts on networking, on transformational leadership and collaboration. And she's also a best-selling author, and I've just knee-deep in her new book, Be Brilliant, How to Lead a Life of Influence, which has actually just launched, and it follows her previous books, It's Who You Know and From Me to We. Janine is also host of the Unleashing Brilliance podcast. Welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast, Janine. It's a real privilege to have you as my guest.
Oh, it's an absolute honour to be here. Thanks for having me on your show.
Oscar Trimboli, who was our guest on episode 168 of the InnovaBuzz podcast, introduced us and suggested that we have a conversation with you, Janine. So big hello to Oscar.
Big hi, isn't he gorgeous?
Yeah, he is. And I think he listens in from time to time. I know he's a big fan of listening. He's passionate about creating, is it 1 billion, I think his vision is, 1 billion deep listeners in the world.
Yeah, yeah, his work is exceptional. And gosh, I think we could all listen a little bit deeper in terms of how we do our work and the impact we're making.
Mm. Now, your obsession, as you call it, is working with leaders and companies to unlock their brilliant performance, and that's the topic of your latest book. So I'm really keen on exploring that in some more depth. You've had 20 years experience in kind of marketing roles and in strategic business roles for some very high profile brands like Ralph Lauren and Oraton, Jaeger, to name a few. I'm curious, how did you kind of make that transition from that marketing and strategy into the people and leadership and networking kind of field?
Oh, that's a great question. I often look back, Jürgen, and go, oh, gosh, how on earth did I end up here? It's fascinating, isn't it, when you start out and you have a dream of what you want to become and then you end up somewhere and you go, how on earth did I get here? I guess looking back, I've always had a fascination with people. You know, I'm a north of England girl. I was brought up on a farm. My dad had a poultry farm and a market stall. And so from a young age, I used to go with him to work the market stall on a Saturday and get engaged with customers, encouraging them to buy not just half a dozen eggs, but let's buy a dozen eggs. So constantly curious. I remember back then being curious about people and connection and their stories. And then that pretty much led me into a career in marketing, where again, it was this fuel around how do you encourage people to buy something? How do you tap into their need, their problems, and how do you connect that product with that need to drive sales, whether it be a product that's been around forever like Ralph Lauren, or whether it be new products that I was lucky enough to be part of in terms of selling. So the Oraton brand I took into Asia, into Hong Kong. When I looked after the Citizen Watch brands, we actually launched a Citizen Healthcare brand, which was all thermometers and blood pressure machines. So again, it's how do you connect those two? And then and when I came to Australia, arrived in Australia at the age of 29, back in the year 2000, you know, working out how old I am. But, you know, at that time, I arrived in a country where I absolutely knew no one. So I had to rebuild a network. I had to find a career because I came here literally just with a backpack and a permanent residency visa. And I had to rebuild a career in a country where I had no social proof. And then obviously rebuilding this dream. And so that gave me this really interesting insight into the power of connection and how when you build deep connections over time, incredible things happen. And over the course of my career, I think I've just got so obsessed at what is the tipping point between those that do okay and those that achieve brilliant performance. And that's what then led to me getting really curious about myself. So at the age of, oh my gosh, 40, I think it was, I decided to leave corporate and build my own business. And again, that was out of this sense of curiosity and connection. I was really fascinated at how when we connect with like-minded thinkers that will stretch us, that will encourage us, that will collaborate with a dream of mutual success, I truly believe we could achieve more. And I proved that through that business. And through that, started meeting so many leaders, which led to the launch of the Unleashing Brilliance podcast, again, trying to explore their stories. And all of this has led to the IP that has been developed over the last 8 years in terms of my work around collaboration and how we collaborate effectively and successfully, how we play on the edge to find the opportunity, then the power of network and how you surround yourself with a group of people to help you succeed. And now this most recent piece of work in Be Brilliant around actually how do we connect with ourselves in terms of who we are, who we are being and who we want to become so that we can communicate and influence more. So I think looking back to answer your question, Jürgen, I've just had this obsession for as long as I can remember with people and what is it that helps them step forward and achieve more, and also what is the stuff that keeps them stuck and believing that they can't actually achieve their dreams. You know, what is that tipping point?
Mm. Yeah, it's fascinating, isn't it? There was something you said in your book, and I thought you just reminded me of it there. And I thought I think that's a fundamental principle underlying that whole kind of performance aspect. And that's, you know, who do we want to be? Who are we being, and who do we want to be, and who can we be? And you talk about the idea of whether we're a human being or a human doing, right?
Yeah.
And so most of us kind of work a day, and we work on tasks, and some people are organized to the extent that they have lists that they work to, but they're still just doing, and lose sight of the big picture, or lose sight of what they want to be, what they want to be, or what they want to become.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, pre-COVID hitting, and even now, it was almost like I think I also say this in the book, we're at risk of becoming the robots of humanity, and that we're going through life conforming even our thinking and how we're operating and how we're living and how we're leading, of how we're launching businesses, how we're driving sales. It's like we've become quite robotic. And my challenge to everyone is that we actually have this potential to become these extraordinary humans of incredible potential if we can unlock our own brilliance. And if we can learn to connect and collaborate in the right way without fear of showing our full selves, without worrying about making mistakes, but actually truly appreciating that the only thing we can ever control right here and right now is ourselves. And it is, who are we? Who are we being every single day, and the impact we are therefore making? And then ultimately, what is it that we want to become, and owning those dreams again? Because, you know, one of the things I know from all of the interviews and research I've done over the years is that those that do achieve are no different to you or I. You know, they have the same hang-ups. They have the same challenges, the lack of self-belief at times, the worry about imposter syndrome. But they've worked out a way of almost dampening the negative and going forward anyway. And what I see in the work that I do is so many people get stuck. They don't think they're good enough. They worry about challenging the norm and doing things different. And it's literally the tipping point is this self-belief, this vision to do more, this desire and this hunger to pursue dreams. And following that almost relentlessly is where the difference happens.
I really like in the book how you lay out kind of very simple grids with a bunch of questions to get you to do some self, or to get me. I found it got me to do some self-reflection in a way that was kind of no judgment, this is really hard or anything like that. It was really just, okay, answer those questions and then start to think about those answers and what that means for me. Why do you think it's so hard for us all really to kind of be more self-aware and do that self-reflection in a way that helps us understand ourselves more and helps us understand, you know, our strengths more and what we can contribute to the overall world?
I think we get busy. I think life takes over. I think we get hooked into a system of relentless pursuit of stuff, of success, of what we should do, and we let other people and things control our time, our calendars, and what we do. And at some point, we push back. At some point, we start questioning, is this it? Is there more that I want to do? Or we start questioning the dreams that we have and the coulda, the shoulda, the woulda kicks in. And to me, I think, you know, the world around us, and now more than ever, it's moving so quickly. It's like we are whirling dervishes, just going through life and trying to grab a hold of stuff. You know, we acquire stuff and yet we're still unhappy. We acquire skills and yet we still don't think we're good enough. And we acquire connections, particularly with social media, and yet we're still feeling disconnected. And I go, the only thing that we can ever have control over is ourselves, but we've forgotten to take that time to just reflect, to percolate, to consider, to actually go, is this where I want to be? And if not, taking ownership of the action you want to take, or is this behavior how I want to be seen? And if not, correcting it. You know, instead, we get over to, I talk about the barriers to brilliance, Jürgen, as there's two types of barriers. One is fatigue. So we get fatigued with being busy. We're exhausted. It keeps us stuck, because why would you when you haven't got the energy to do anything anyway? We're fatigued with being stretched in multiple directions, and we're fatigued with the significant amount of choice. You know, not only the choice as to what we do, but even when we make a decision, we doubt and question the decisions we've made. It's like, our brains are exploding. So fatigue gets in the way. And the other thing that gets in the way of our brilliance and us pursuing our dreams is this epidemic of blame-itis that is going on. I talk about that we enter, and all of us do this, we enter the triangle of blame, where we're either detracting to something else as to the reason we are not achieving what it is that we want to achieve, or we deflect to someone else, and it's their fault that we're not achieving what we want to achieve. Or at worst, we become defeatist and it's our fault and we beat ourselves up because we don't think we're good enough. We wallow in our imperfections and our limitations and our lack of self-belief. And all of us do this. We either struggle from entering into the triangle of blame, or we suffer from fatigue, or at worst, it's the two of them. Now, there is no way of moving forward with any of those things because they just keep us still. They just keep us stuck, and they keep us in this place of coulda, shoulda, woulda. And my challenge in my recent book, Be Brilliant, is about, you know what? It's a choice. You have to take ownership. You have to understand that brilliance is a choice. Brilliance is a practice, and brilliance is a discipline. And no one can do it for you. Absolutely, you need support. Absolutely, you need a network. Absolutely, all that stuff. But fundamentally, it starts and it ends with you. Who do you want to be? Who are you being? And who do you want to become? And owning those dreams, owning your expertise, owning that product that you're going to market with, owning your business, and taking ownership for everything so that you can step forward. If we don't take ownership, it's always somebody or something else's fault as to our lack of progress. And that results in status quo, in a lack of momentum. It just results in no initiative and no innovation.
I like that. I mean, we talked at the beginning before we started recording, we were talking about curiosity. And I like in the book that, you know, one of the things you point out is take ownership, but you also say don't beat yourself up for these other things if you do get stuck in that triangle for a while. And I think one of the really good questions there is, I'm curious why I'm feeling the way I'm feeling right now. I'm curious, why am I stuck in this? So, and again, it's that self-reflection bit, isn't it? So How do you kind of take that and move out of that by using that curiosity frame, if you like?
Yeah, so if I take these last few weeks that we're experiencing as a globe, really, on a world scale, the reality is, you know, right now, there are three massive macro challenges that we're all trying to navigate. The economic challenge, the health challenge, and the social challenges, whether it be race, gender, and what we haven't yet seen is the impact on poverty and the social dynamics that go on. The reality is we've got all of this stuff going on, and in it, we are all trying to look after ourselves, our families, our communities, our businesses, whatever it is. Probably about 3 weeks into the first stage of lockdown here in Australia, I literally had this feeling of massive anxiety, of incredible sadness at what was going on in the world, of panic as to where I was going to evolve, what I was going to do, because like many of your listeners, you know, business tanked, clients were being lost, income was being deferred. And I went into, like all of us probably have done at some point, blaming the situation and getting quite sort of angry and anxious about it. I realized what I do is when I feel that, I literally take time out. And Jürgen, I think it really is as simple as taking that time to take ownership, to reflect and go, what can I control here right now? How am I feeling? And what is it about what's going on that's driving my behavior? So what I realized, you know, all of us have a particular hunger that will drive us. And there are one of three hungers that we are all driven by. So you're either driven by a need for power, which is a need for control and a sense of agency, or you're driven by a need for ego, which is a need to be have the answers and to be the smartest, or you're driven by a need of intimacy, which is a need to be liked. And every single one of us, Jürgen, I'm curious as to which yours is, but every single one of us has one of those as our primary driver. Now, on reflection, what I do when I reflect, I journal and I'll literally meditate and I'll just go, what's my part to play in this? What have I initiated here? What am I not doing? How can I take ownership of this situation? What I realized in myself is my primary driver is actually power, is i.e. a sense of control, a sense of knowing what's happening. And if you look at my career, my life, my business, it's always planned. There's always the 90-day plans, the two-year plans, the big vision plan. I know what project I'm working on this month, next month, etc. And suddenly it had all been wiped away. So suddenly I'd lost control. And that was what was fueling my anxiety. So I went, as through my journaling and meditation, what can I do now to get back in control? Realizing that I had to surrender to the bigger stuff and actually go, the only things I can control are my relationships with my clients, the work and output that I do every single day, and actually my habits and my plan each week to get me back on track. And so taking ownership, I could have sat and been in blame mode of the environment, the situation, the government, politics, the world, et cetera, et cetera. Or I go, okay, what can I control right now? And to me, that is what we have to do. We have to take the time out to slow down, to reflect, to percolate, and to go, where do I take ownership in this? And everything requires us to do that, whether it be your business, whether it be a negotiation, whether it be an area of conflict, whether it be a mistake that you made, a failure. As soon as we take ownership of our part in it, it actually empowers us to make the next decision. And that fundamentally is what we all need to start doing.
Hmm. Yeah, I like that. That's a great example. I'm a big believer in Tony Robbins's 6 core human needs. And so, you know, if you think about 2 of those are certainty and variety, and they're a little bit at odds because variety can, at the extreme, is uncertainty. And of course, the need for certainty certainly kind of vanished in a couple of days with this pandemic suddenly landing in Australia, and the impact that had on businesses when the government shut down all in-person meetings. And of course, the other big core need is the need for connection, and that need for connection suddenly wasn't being met through, you know, what most of us probably meet that with, and that's face-to-face meetings with friends, family, business associates, customers, suppliers, and all of a sudden that was disappeared too. And so all of a sudden that whole, you know, the core needs thing had shifted to a point where if you didn't take some action and say, well, okay, how am I going to meet that need now in a different way, and also in a way that serves me rather than kind of is self-pity, because if you go into self-pity, that probably can meet the need for certainty.
which is the ownership piece again. I mean, it's quite interesting, right? Because even you map what happened, even if you put it, whether it be Tony Robbins' stuff or those hungers or even Maslow's hierarchy of needs, everyone went into survival mode, We saw toilet roll gate and people panicking about it. It was like those safety pieces. And actually the third level of belonging of Maslow's hierarchy of needs is belonging. And as much as people were connecting online, there's a difference between what I call that transactional connecting and that transformational connecting, that really deep stuff. And I think what we've seen is, you know, a lot of disconnection, which all of us are having to replace with connection. The life and work has become very fractured, and we've got to somehow get a level of clarity around that. And there is still different levels of fear and anxiety that is going to go on for a while. And it's up to all of us to try and find a sense of calm in that to be able to navigate through it. So, you know, it's almost like now more than ever, the world that we're in that is requiring us to be more curious in terms of exploring the edges of possibility. It's requiring us to connect more. And when I talk about connection, it's not just people, but it's connecting the dots of skills, of talent, of opportunity, of capability and people to find collaborative opportunities. That connectedness and ability to sense make is important. It's asking us, the world's asking us to trust our intuition more than ever, because, you know, we've never been here before. And so we don't have all the answers. And so more than ever, we absolutely are going to have to research and question and try and get the backup evidence. But at the end of the day, whatever we do from here onwards is whole new territory. So we're going to have to trust our intuition. And the final thing is this need to inspire others. Because if nothing else, this has shown us that our teams, the people around us, our clients, our suppliers, all want to have a vision, a sense of hope, a direction. And so it's up to us to inspire other people to follow that. And if you think about that as a concept, you know, the need to be curious, to connect dots, to trust intuition and to inspire, even the thought of that is quite overwhelming. And I go, well, the only thing that you have to do, if you've got to own yourself, you've got to become more brilliant, you've got to become this human of extraordinary potential, because undertaking any meaningful endeavor, whatever it may be, requires you to be exceptional. And if you are anyway doubting yourself, if you are anyway beating yourself up about what you don't have, if you are anyway blaming other people for your lack of progress, then you're just going to end up getting stuck. So it requires all of us to tap into what we've already got and to start unleashing that brilliance, because the more we do that for ourselves, the more we create the opportunity for the people around us and in our worlds to become more brilliant too. And isn't that what we need in this world that's driving change, these industries that are wanting newness and innovation, and, you know, communities that are asking new questions. And actually all of us, to your point, Jürgen, are wanting better connection, real connection, and a sense of meaning associated with that. And I don't think it matters whether you're in a people training-based business like myself, whether you're launching an innovative product, whether you're launching a new business, whether you're expanding into new markets. That basic need is what we all need right now. And it needs you individually to step up, all of us.
Yeah. Well, certainly. I mean, one of my big passions is making marketing human again in this world where technology seems to have taken over. I mean, there's some wonderful technology that can be used and can help us in marketing and in other aspects of scaling human interactions. But unfortunately, a lot of people kind of, what's the right word? They outsource the relationship building thing to the technology, or they abandon it to the technology.
Yeah. Business has always been about people.
Yeah.
And yet, to your point, we seem to have forgotten it a little bit. And I think it's thinking about, you know, and it's, lots of people have written about this as technology is an enabler. And yes, it is. And it's what we think about it that's going to create the difference. I do believe that now more than ever, our ability to think is our competitive advantage. It's the only thing you can't find on Google, on Wikipedia, is what you think. And too many of us aren't creating the space and the time to actually think. And the thinking is where the magic is.
Yeah. And I'd be more specific than that. In fact, you said earlier about curiosity and then connecting the dots. I think the, you know, building those connections and drawing inspiration from people in other industries or from ideas or things that are going on in other industries and connecting those dots to what's in your sphere, and curating that and providing that wisdom to your community. Yeah. That, I think that's where, you know, the knowledge can be really powerful.
Yeah, it's also requires again, that's where I totally agree, because I think the diversity of thinking, of ideas, of experience, of background, of cultural heritage, of industry is where the answers are. But again, it provides a massive human challenge, because it needs all of us to be prepared to have our unconscious beliefs and judgments challenged and rewired. Because, and this is where this whole, you know, there's a whole chapter in the book about this judgment piece, because all of us bring stuff to the table. So we can go into, you know, let's collaborate, let's work together, let's co-design a product, and we all come in thinking we're working on it, but all of us bring with it our baggage, all of us bring with it the voices in our head, our unconscious belief systems, our unconscious thoughts. And this is where I go, we've actually got to be even braver, because you've got to be prepared to leave that baggage behind and be prepared to be re-challenged on what you think. And this is the tipping point when we're talking about innovation, when we're talking about looking for new answers or new ways to market. The thing that gets in the way is ourselves and our existing predetermined judgment. And it's that willingness to have an open mind, which is easy to say, but for so many of us, hard to do.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's a lot there to unpack. And I was going to ask you about, to elaborate a little bit on the four laws of brilliance, which is how you kind of lay out the book. And one of the things that struck me and certainly resonates with me, because you mentioned earlier, you know, that we're tired and but we're doing one more thing, or we're taking one more course, or getting one more person on board and saying, well, when all this happens, then we're ready, then we can do whatever it is we're aiming to do. But you're pointing out the starting point really is that you've got everything you need right now. You have everything inside you that you need right now. So accept and lean into your brilliance. And then you go on to outline that for those four laws or four steps. So can you kind of give us a bit of a high level snapshot of them?
Yeah, I will. So
just enough to get people to read the book. Yeah.
So I introduce four laws of brilliance in my latest book, Be Brilliant. And these were pretty much, these came off the back of all those interviews, all of the research I did, where these four key traits kept coming out every single interview I had. And then I also overlaid those traits on my career, and I went, oh my gosh, this is real. These traits are continuous. And so the four laws are all about starting out with building your own inner confidence and self-belief, because unless you have connected with yourself, it's impossible to bring your whole self into how you connect and lead others. So law number one is all about being you and owning your spotlight. And essentially, law number one is about building up your self-belief and building up your visibility out there in the marketplace. Quit the hiding, quit the keeping small, and actually bring on the standing in your spotlight and letting people see who you are, what your area of expertise is, and what your vision for the future is. So that's law number one. Law number two is then about, are you ready? And a law number two is essentially all about harnessing your energy. Because I see too many people who have a very clear vision. You probably see it in your work too, Jürgen, where they've got this vision and this plan, but they work themselves to the bone and they are literally like robots. They're killing themselves from the inside and they're exhausted. And eventually what happens is their vision just disappears through sheer exhaustion. So law number two is all about harnessing your energy and adopting the right habits and behaviors to ensure that you are time rich and surviving versus time poor and time rich and thriving versus time poor and surviving. Law number three then is about, okay, now it's time to move from this place of me into the inclusive and collaborative space of we. And law number three is about being together and connecting with intent. No one can be successful on their own. It's impossible. So law three is all about, how do you engage better? How do you build a network of incredible support around you? And I outline some of the critical people I believe you need to have in your network. And then finally, learning how to collaborate more effectively to unlock these ideas. And finally, law number four is around magnifying your impact. This is where we start leading versus keeping our ideas to ourselves. And it's where we're consistently walking the talk, amplifying our own vision and business and careers and beliefs, but also amplifying the people around you, around us. Now, they're not necessarily in the book, you alluded to it earlier. I've introduced a way of sort of self-assessment or self-awareness, because you will never be perfect at all of them all the time. There is always one law that needs your focus. And this is why I've written this book intentionally, as a way of picking up, checking in, and almost going, okay, what do I need to focus on now? Remember at the beginning, I said business being brilliant is a choice. It's also a practice, and it is very much a discipline. So much like trying to run a marathon, or learning how to do a one-handed press-up, or learning how to do yoga, it is through the mastery and the continual evolution and growth and reflection that you become better. It was Sir Edmund Hillary that said, it's not the mountain we must conquer, but actually ourselves. And I go, this is exactly what becoming more brilliant is all about. We've got to conquer ourselves, continually check in on ourselves, and continuously be brave enough, courageous enough, curious enough to look in on ourselves and go, what do I need to do better, differently tomorrow to become a better person, a better entrepreneur, a better leader, better business owner, and to help others shine even brighter too.
Yeah, I really love that quote from Edmund Hillary. I'd kind of forgotten about it for a long time until I popped up in your book again. And one of the things, I'm not sure whether it was in that same section, because it's just, you've just prompted this in my mind, this thought, but it was something that when I read it, I thought, oh, wow, that was me. And it was this belief that, and I think when you're in the corporate world in particular, this must be really strong and widespread, this belief that if I do a good job, everything will come towards me. So I'll get promoted, I'll get pay rises, I'll get a bigger department, more influence, whatever it might be. And the work should speak for itself kind of philosophy. Why do you think we have that attitude, and that we're kind of so reluctant to talk about what we have to contribute and make people aware of how we can perhaps even take on more?
I think that's an interesting question, and I wonder whether it's a generational thing too. I grew up very much being drummed into me, you work hard, you'll get noticed. You put in the effort and you'll get promoted. And so when I look at my corporate career and those first, well, actually the entirety of my corporate career, I would put in the long hours. I didn't really know how to shut down. I'd be constantly at the organization's beck and call. And I've almost had to rewire myself to believe in my contribution. I'm curious, and I don't know what the answer is. I don't know if you've seen it in terms of that next generation coming through, whether they feel the same or whether it is a generational thing. Irrespective, I think we're seeing, industry, corporate, is showing us that actually it's not always about what you do anymore. It doesn't guarantee a job for a lifetime. It doesn't guarantee security. And I think when you look at where the world is going right now, we've all got to get more curious about our contribution, the value that we're adding, and the problems that we are solving versus the job description and the job title. I think we're going to see a massive evolution into more portfolio style careers, people doing multiple jobs where they're solving problems across multiple organizations. I think the traditional corporate career structure or growth plan will be challenged. And I think, in this age where unemployment is on the rise and redundancy is on the rise. The one thing I say to my clients is no one can ever take away your experience. No one can ever take away what you have done, what you've experienced, the results, what you've learned. It's about you repackaging it into, okay, what problems can I solve? What problems right now that industry, that companies, that leaders are facing, can I actually solve? And it's this slight reframe that's needed. Because working hard hasn't actually got us anywhere.
Yeah.
It hasn't. I mean, it's working smartly, but those of us that, you know, God, when I think about the hours I put in and the amount of phone calls I took at ridiculous times of night and the holidays and the phone calls whilst I was on holiday, none of it. Yes, I climbed the ladder, but it was still that piece of actually reframing. Here's what I know I can solve. Here's how I can help.
Yeah, I love that. I really like that reframe because thinking back to my corporate career, a lot of it, I mean, in the early days, it was very nebulous. And then at some point, there was a real push to clarify job descriptions and expectations of people. But it was all very transactional and it was all around, here's a list of the activities that we expect you to do. And so it was all focused on, well, if I do those activities really well, I should get noticed and I should get promoted. But I think, you know, the changing that focus on what problems can I solve and who do I solve them for, which essentially is a marketing question.
It is. And the one thing I say to people is, you know, it's almost like we've got to check in on our own naivety. Like the company owns your job, but you own your career.
Hmm.
Again, it's a subtle reframe. Companies always own jobs. And as you and I both know, depending on what the financial parameters are at the time, the company will make the decision on that job. It's never about you, it's about the job. But you own your career. And we have to own that career. We have to own our skills, our expertise. We have to own who we're being. We have to own who we want to become. We have to own our brilliance and actually manage our careers and take responsibility for that. It's not up to the company to manage your career. It's up to you to manage your career. And I think right now that's what we all have to remember. It's up to us individually to manage our career, not enter that blame triangle.
Yeah.
You know, it's their fault. You've got to take ownership of it.
Self-reflection again, isn't it?
Yeah.
All right. Well, this has been fabulous. Janine, I'm just watching the time a little bit here. I think it's a good point here to move on to the buzz, which is our innovation round. And it's designed to help our audience who are primarily leaders and innovators in their field with some tips from your experience. So I've got five questions and hopefully you'll give us some really insightful answers that will inspire the listener to go and do something awesome today as a result.
Yeah.
You all set?
I'm ready.
What do you think the number one thing is that anyone needs to do to be more innovative?
Well, I think you and I both touched on this, is that curiosity. And curiosity comes from multiple places now. So too many of us will just stay in our frame of reference, reading the stuff we know about, talking to the people in our world, staying within industry, almost blinkered. I think now more than ever, the place to find innovation is you've got to be brave enough to step out of your comfort zone, whether that be what you're reading, what you're listening to, the people you're hanging out with, the stuff, the information that you are getting curious about. So curiosity to me is the fundamental thing because the answers are there. We've just got to open our eyes and see them and open our ears and hear them. And often the answers are out of industry, out of your existing frame of reference.
Yeah, that's great advice. And I'm reminded we were some of the work we were doing in our research times into surface coatings, we got a lot of inspiration. There were some fabulous inventions that came about studying plant biology and biochemistry and how plants adapted to their environment, what they did by way of protecting the surfaces of their leaves, for example, from getting dirty and from clogging up the pores so that they could breathe the carbon dioxide. So there are lessons from that where, you know, if you didn't have the curiosity to, I wonder how they keep the dust off that you couldn't then take that knowledge and apply it into a totally different area.
Absolutely. I share the story in the book about Great Ormond Street Hospital. You know, back in the 90s, Great Ormond Street Hospital is a big children's hospital in London, looks after very, very sick kids. Back in the 90s, too many children, increasing number of children, were dying from their operating theatre as they were transferred into ICU. And they got consultant in after consultant in. As you can imagine, the British government and the media were going off because of the numbers. And nobody could find the answer. And one night, two of the surgeons were watching the Formula One. And they were watching the car come in into the pit stop. And almost within nanoseconds, all of the procedures being done on the car, and then that car zooming out and hitting the finish line. And the surgeons, with curiosity, went, "That's exactly what we do when we're transferring children from theatre into ICU." And so what they did is they brought in the Ferrari pit crew. And the Ferrari pit crew came into the operating theatre to watch what was going on. And essentially they went, "It's way too noisy. There's no one in control. Everyone's doing a whole heap of stuff. It's a mess. No wonder mistakes are happening. You need a lollipop person." Now, you know, like at the pit stop where there's a guy that's standing there with his clipboard and silently he's ticking off each process, and only when it's ready does the lollipop turn around to allow the car to go. That's what you need. And so they made the anaesthetist the equivalent of the lollipop person, and mortality rates declined. And so now in hospitals around the world, the anaesthetist is the equivalent of the lollipop person in the Formula One pit crew. And it's exactly what you've been talking about, this ability and bravery to explore outside of the box of what you know is where the answers are.
Great. Love it. All right. Now, what's the best thing you've done to develop new ideas?
For me, it really does come down to exactly that. So I research, I ask lots of questions, I go and find the best in the business, and then I think. I literally just take time out to scribble, to journal, and to think. And it's that a bit, that thinking space for me is where I develop my ideas. So whether it be taking myself away for a few days with my journal, but it is that get all the information and take myself away for some quiet time to think. And that's usually where my best ideas come from.
Yeah, and you've touched on journaling a couple of times. And one of the things that I like also, is it a failure journal that you have? Because we touched on a little bit, but I just want to emphasize again, the taking risks and embracing failure as an opportunity to actually learn, rather than as something, that failed, so I'm going to beat myself up because I wasn't successful with that. So is that an important part of the process for you?
Oh, gosh, absolutely. I mean, if you could see, I think your next question is around favorite tool. Yeah. And, I was trying to come up with a really smart idea for this. I'm like, you know what, my favorite tool is pen and paper. Literally, if you could see my desk where I'm sitting and my current planning, it's a blank sheet of paper with scribbles and post-it. And I literally download my brain onto paper and then re-scribble and recreate. And only when I look at it do I then go, okay, how do we bring this to life? So for me, that's exactly how I do it. It is the journaling, the writing, the emptying the brain, the lots of scribbles and models, and then showing people and being quite iterative, being prepared to not get it perfectly right first time, being prepared to show people when it's 70%, 60%, 75% there, to get the impact, to then iterate again, to perfect it, to move it forward. And I think that's something I've learned through my career, actually. You know, in the early days of my career, it's all about perfection. But then as I took on more leadership positions, that willingness to try and fail, that willingness to fail, I don't see, you know, the question I'm often asked is, where did you fail? Interesting, my brain doesn't think in failure, because I see it as a learning opportunity. Yeah, I've messed up. Yeah, I've made a whole heap of mistakes. But every single mistake, I've learned something which has then contributed to the next phase of my career or my business. And I think it's that different mindset. So I often, yes, that failure journal, I'll write this stuff down. And often you'll find me giggling at myself. Oh, my God, I've done it again.
Yeah, well, my business coach always says there's no such thing as failure. It's all feedback. So keeping a journal of, you know, I like the idea of the failure journal because that way you can kind of keep track of, well, what feedback am I getting from this? Because often there's, okay, that didn't work. I need to do it differently. I need to try something different. But often there's a, I find if you reflect on it, there's a deeper feedback beyond that. And it's like, how was I being when I did that? You know, is there something like this didn't work and that process didn't work or that idea didn't work, but maybe it's actually something about me, how I was being at the time, rather than the transactional stuff, if you know what I mean.
Oh, absolutely. And I think also as we get older in our careers, as we have more experience, you know, that opportunity to reflect on those failures and share those with other people, particularly people that you're either sponsoring or that you're encouraging to develop their own careers is phenomenal. And we forget this stuff. We forget that moment when we're in our early 20s or 30s or 40s or whatever it is, you know, where we messed up or we did X or we did Y. And yet in it, not just for ourselves, but other people are incredible learnings. And I think part of our responsibility is to share that stuff with other people so that they can learn too.
All right. Now, what's the best way you think to keep a project on track?
Oh, gosh, I have other people to do this for me. I am such a, I don't know whether you've picked this up, I'm such a entrepreneurial big picture thinker. I'm very much big visionary that I have all, and again, this is something I learned during, after, you know, the first early stage of my career. I need people around me to help keep things on track because I am rubbish at that stuff. So in our own business, we, you know, we use on a lot of online tools like your Slacks and your Trellos. But I think it's about, if we bring back the humanity piece, it's about when you're collaborating, getting really clear of what the expectations are, making sure that before you leave a conversation or a meeting, people are clear on what they're committing to, and then making sure you check in. The other thing too is we never go from A to B smoothly. project planning tools are awesome. And of course, there's always milestones to meet. And our ideal is we get from A to B with a nice, smart, nice line with all these ticks, ticks crossed and done. But as you and I both know, the reality is it's a big zigzaggy line of change, and you hope to get to B, but you're probably likely to get to C. And so I always think that, and this is the way I always lead, I go, yeah, we've got to have a plan. But a plan is a framework. It's not a rule book. And I'm a massive believer in it being a framework, not a rule book. I think if we're too many rules, it actually dampens opportunity to innovate and to zig and zag and change and evolve based on the situation around you. Whereas with a framework, it's your ideal, but it almost still instills this curiosity and this opportunity to question, are we on the right track still, or should we evolve it here? So I hope that answers your question. Very much me as a marketeer, what I, you know, that was my approach. I'm a very entrepreneurial marketeer that sees and then goes, okay, how do we get there? How do we get around it? Okay, you're telling me this, I reckon we do this. And that's always served me, but have to absolutely have people keeping me on track.
Yeah, I love the framework and the structure around that. And one of the things, because I've been looking at project planning software again recently, as I do from time to time, because I'm not entirely happy with any of them. I'm never satisfied. And one of the things that I came across again recently was, you know, these ones have Gantt chart available to them. And as an engineer from way back, of course, Gantt charts is something that I learned. This is how you plan a project and you have a Gantt chart. And it kind of reminded me, well, Gantt charts kind of, it's almost just one-dimensional, not even two-dimensional. And yet, like you say, that, you know, the project path can be kind of completely three or four-dimensional.
Totally. I'm giggling to myself because I'm remembering a lovely project manager I had on a project when I was at Oriton, and we were launching the brand new website, the merchandise planning system of the website. And every Monday or whatever day, we'd have this project plan meeting. And every day, every week, she'd bring out the Gantt chart. And every week, I had to report on the Gantt chart. But can I tell you, between Monday and the following Monday, I never once looked at the Gantt chart. It didn't, because it was literally like, oh, what am I supposed to do? Okay, great. But then it would, because it was so one-dimensional, my brain doesn't work like that. My husband will tell you the same. Because it was one-dimensional, it doesn't allow my creativity, whereas I'm constantly looking at edges and around and trying to find those connection points. And so I think it's more about getting the right project planning tool to fit the way somebody works and thinks, and hence why a project management role is actually more complicated than ever, because it isn't a one size fits all. It isn't about, it's actually you're driving the ship versus deciding point A, point B, point C, and bringing all of the different thinking together to help it ultimately get to that destination. And of course, the multiple dimensions of not just the work that needs to be done, the personality types, the work avoidance that's going on, the new opportunities that get thrown at you, the problem stacks. Like, how on earth do you navigate all of that on a Gantt chart? You can't. Mm. It's requiring specific skills. So I think it's more of a task checking and then creating the space to allow forward momentum versus getting stuck in process and policy and procedure and Gantt charts. To me, as a marketeer, that's what I always was challenged.
Yeah, to take your analogy one step further, it's like the project manager really is the pilot of the ship rather than the person that drew the map.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm. Absolutely. Yeah.
All right. Now, this is at the crux of one of your rules. What's the best way? What's the number one thing anyone can do to differentiate themselves?
I think the number one thing anyone can do to differentiate themselves is to actually own what is different about them. I think too many of us are trying to fit in and conform to a job description or what we think we need to be like as an entrepreneur, a leader, a business owner, a marketeer. And yet in that conformity lies sameness. And once we start competing on same, we end up competing on price. So the best way to differentiate yourself is to actually own your difference, own your spotlight, own your character, own the strengths, but also I call them the jiggly bits, you know, the stuff you'd like to hide, squash in, get rid of, you know, own the jiggly stuff, own the stuff that's memorable about you. It's like we remember Seth Godin because of his glasses and his bald head. We remember Bono because of his sunglasses. We remember Donald Trump because of his crazy hair. You know, own your differences, whatever it may be in terms of what you think, how you look, how you behave. And stop faking it till you make it. And the other add to that is get very clear on the problem that you're solving. Get very clear on the value that you are bringing to your business, to your role, to your clients, not just the job that you do, but what is the problem you're solving?
Hmm. So who are you being and what problem are you solving? So it's a reframe, isn't it, that we've been talking about?
Yeah. Absolutely. Who are you? Who are you being? And who do you want to become? And get really clear on that stuff. Yeah.
Great. Thanks, Janine. This has been fabulous. Now, where can people find out more about you, learn about your books, and find the podcast, and also maybe reach out and say thank you for what you've shared today?
Well, that would be brilliant. Thank you for asking. So you can find me at my website, janinegarner.com.au. Or find me on LinkedIn as Janine Garner. And the podcast is available on iTunes and Spotify and SoundCloud, and it is Unleashing Brilliance.
Great. And you've got some fabulous guests there. I listened to an episode just recently with Neen James, who we've had on our show too.
Oh, she's fabulous.
Mm. All right. Now, do you have some parting advice for our listener today?
Yes, I do. You have everything you need in that wonderful head and mind and body of yours are all the skills and all of the capabilities and all of the thinking that you need to be brilliant. Within your teams exist already the ideas and the innovations that you need to take your business into the future. You've just got to be brave enough to unlock it and in your business in an entirety exists what that next move is. But all of it requires you to slow down. It requires you to get out of your own way and to ultimately understand that the only enemy that exists is the enemy within. And if you can control that enemy within, the world is your oyster, the opportunity to live and lead a successful and brilliant and fulfilling life is all there for the taking, but you've got to get out of your own way and put that enemy within to bed.
Wonderful. That's a fabulous message. Finally, Janine, who would you like me to chat with on a future and Over Buzz podcast and why?
Ooh, who would I like you to talk to? I met a fabulous guy recently called Ben Fredrickson. I don't know if you've met him. He is an ex Big Four consulting firm that's actually gone out and is now doing some really fascinating stuff in terms of the innovation piece. And the other person I think you should chat to is a guy called Simon Mayer, M-E-Y-E-R. I met him many years ago now. He changed the face of recruitment, managed to get investment and really built a recruitment business based on purpose. But he's evolved once again and is currently now running a business called Compono, which is using data to create a whole purpose fit model around employee fit for the future. So a great thinker, very purposeful driven, and very much about playing a different and bigger game in terms of the new world of thinking.
Mm, great. Well, sounds like a couple of fascinating people. So I'll get an introduction to Ben and Simon from you and we'll bring them on the show as well.
Absolutely. That would be great.
So thanks so much, Janine, for sharing your time and your insights so generously today and giving us some more depth and insights into the book, Unleashing Brilliance. I've really enjoyed this. I'm going to finish reading the book now. And in the meantime, I wish you all the best and let's stay in touch.
Thank you, Jürgen. It's been an absolute pleasure and a great conversation. Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed that delightful and inspiring conversation with Janine and took something away from her episode. My takeaways were the question of what problem do I solve, as well as her techniques and questions for raising self-awareness. I'd love to know what you took away from Janine's episode. Leave a comment below the blog post, which you can find at innovabiz.co/Janine Garner. That is JanineGarner, all lowercase, all one word, innovabiz.co/Janine Garner. You'll also find contact information for getting in touch with Janine there, as well as links to her website, her books, the Unleashing Brilliance podcast, and the other resources we spoke about in today's conversation. Janine suggested that we have a conversation with Ben Fredrickson, founder of Innovate and Grow, and Australian employment market expert Simon Mayer on future InnovaBuzz podcast episodes. So Ben and Simon, keep an eye on your inboxes for an invitation from us to the InnovaBuzz podcast, courtesy of Janine Garner. Tune in again to the next episodes of the InnovaBuzz podcast, where we've got more fantastic guests lined up, including Michael Roderick of Small Business Enterprises and Ross Simmons, founder of Foundation Marketing. Thanks for listening to this episode. Make sure you subscribe to the show to be reminded of new episodes. It's free to subscribe. Leave a review if you like. Even if you don't like me, I'm okay with that. I'm asking you to leave a review because it helps other people find this show. Go to innovabiz.co to join our marketing transformation community and access a free gift my team and I made for you. It's the Marketing Master Mini Class. We want to give you everything you need to transform your marketing into a human-centered, relationship-focused growth engine. Until next time, I'm Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz. Remember, be awesome and keep innovating.